Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, and welcome to No Small Questions. You may have noticed that, again, it is not Superfan Sam, it is Superfan Han. And today I am joined by possibly two of the most mysterious members of the Abraca Lads, or the Fate Mark Five. We have the amazing Daryl Bailey, who plays Enkidu, and the incredible Chris Watts, who plays Gaius, the Master Bard. And I was going to try and do a whole thing about mysterious people, mysterious multiple identities, but my brain couldn't make those jokes in time. So instead you get this. hi guys.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
That was incredible. Doing all right.
I've got a very croaky throat tonight, so I'm not my usual silky, velvety voiced self. Hey-o! So I will just be my usual croaky monarchy. Nonsense person. But yeah, really excited for this. Been looking forward to it all day. And you know what? This is the first time we've met, isn't it, Hannah?
I know, but weirdly, I feel like it's not because I've listened to so many hours of you playing Gaius, which is kind of like a weird thing to be like, I know this person. No, they don't know who I am. We've never met. This is odd.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, you're going to be asking me questions, yet really, I feel like it should be the other way around.
One day in No Small Questions, we'll turn it on the super fans.
Oh, I like the sound.
Yo,
of
that would be cool. Actually, that's
oh no,
that actually like
a thing by mistake.
Yeah, you come up with a thing.
It's a thing now.
Nah.
Yeah, exactly. It's canon.
Pip, what have I done?
I want it. Pip is like, she doesn't speak for all of us.
It's the biggest face palm I've ever seen in a tiny thumbnail.
Oh, no.
Oh my God. No, the filter is not engaged today. All the things are coming out. Oh, no. Hopefully, that will also apply to you guys. We'll get past some of these mysterious filters, so we'll get some really, really cool information. But I do have to say that cool information can only go up to episode 67, Chargelt Hall. So this is your spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert!
If you have not listened to episode 67, Chargelt Hall, or a few of the episodes leading up to that, you might want to go and do that now before you listen to this. Or if you're a person who kind of likes spoilers, like me, in a weird way, this will be fine. Enjoy yourself.
Mm.
So without further ado, let's go. Let's do this thingy.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Starting with possibly the most serious question of all, for both of you, which is, how many sets of dice do you own? And is one of them lucky? And that's from Mike C.
Ooh.
Mike C needs to know about the dice.
How many do I own?
I mean, man. I'll start off because I feel like Daryl's answer is going to be much more complex. But basically, I have got exactly. Let me just open up my tomb. Oh, nobody know me. I feel like that's like a special cupboard with lights coming down on the dice and a spotlight for Daryl and candles and incense.
Amazing.
No, for me, it's I picked up, like, I borrowed a bunch from friends left, right and center. And I would love to maintain a set dice that is all one color, that is beautiful, that I use. But I'll be honest with you, it's just a jumble sale of dice, all of varying sizes. I wish the D6s were all the same size, but I've got some from, like, various, like, like board games that are, like,
you did it from board
small.
Games, yeah. Where they're, like, mini.
Yeah, oh, my yeah, gosh.
Yeah. You know what? And the problem is, as well, I doodle on them and stuff like that. So the answer is I don't have a special bunch of dice. But what I do is every session, I do collect my, I think maybe I've got, like, 6 D20s, and I roll all of them and I take the highest dice because I'm just like,
yeah.
And you know what? I was a skeptic before doing this show, and then everyone was talking about charging dice and all this dice magic going
yes.
on.
Yes, so dice magic.
Yeah, it's a real thing. And I accept now.
It is a real thing.
I accept now that that's a thing I do.
Yes. It's so funny when you start playing with luck, when you're like a really skeptical person, you're like, no, this isn't going to get to me. I'm above all this ridiculous nonsense. And then after a while, you're like, but the nonsense is fun. And then yes. after that, you're like, oh no, the nonsense is real. It's serious.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's real.
And there is that classic thing of, what's it called? That placebo effect where maybe not the placebo effect, but it's like that wanting willingness to be like, that D1. That one wasn't like a chance, that was fate. Like, I have been marked by something and this is destined to go this way. So
Yeah, exactly.
And like in D&D, like you sort of fall into those themes, don't you? Of like, okay, it has to be fate. There is no like probability to this world. So the answer is I've got a bunch of dice, but they're not special until I roll them, I suppose.
It sounds like the chaotic end of the spectrum of dice collecting.
Exactly.
Going from like lawful to chaotic. This is definitely chaos corner.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome. How about you, Daryl?
I do have special dice.
Yeah.
Of course I do. Right now I'm holding my Critical Role big purple D20 dice.
Ooh.
Which I don't roll for No Small Rolls because it is incredibly noisy to roll because it is massive. It comes in like a marriage, like engagement ring box that opens up like that. Like, you know,
wow,
like
an engagement box.
It's a big purpley shiny D20 from Critical Role.
Would you roll it for No Small Questions?
Yeah.
Of course. Rolled an 11.
Oh, what? We didn't even hear it at all.
I want to hear that gajunk.
Destroy your table.
I rolled it in my box. I have a box that I roll in and I don't want to like fart around it. But I do have special dice. I've got. I bought the special edition of Triangle Strategy last year. It was a tactical role-playing game for Switch, and it came. Didn't know this. It came with 6d6 dice made out of the different materials you can grind within the game. Bronze is a stone dice as well. Tin, beautiful dice, which I love. Also, I've got. I think my favourite dice are the astronomy dice from your wizards. You are wizards. I guess that's a Harry Potter pun. You're a wizard. They were incredibly expensive, but so worth it. Shiny astrology dice that twinkle with little stars in each one.
I do love the sparkly
like
dice.
Yeah. Astronomy symbols on the on some of the numbers. They're beautiful.
That's magical.
Yeah. Those are my favourite. I did buy a set of dice for Enkidu.
Okay, yes. So Ashley Dangerfield has asked us in the chat, Daryl, do you buy dice for each character that you play?
I don't. But I bought some from Beholder's Gaze. Shout out to Grace for introducing me to that. There are these like very beautiful purple dice with this like, it's like a magical gem. Quote unquote, like center that are purple, which I'm like, oh, these are perfect. And they're called Arcane Focus. And I was like, ooh, it's just kind of, there's a kind of magic in the naming of it and the aesthetic. And I love those dice. I got a few others, but I think the astrology dice take it as like my special dice.
I will do a shout out actually, because I did actually buy some dice, some like my favorite dice, which are kind of like translucent blue. And I got those from Orcnest in London.
Oh, sweet.
It's a really, like, if people come to London, like, it's a really small, niche little board game shop. And, you know, you can tell that they are just like independent, working hard, you know, really there for the community. If you get a chance, people, when you come to London, go check out Orcnest. It's so cool. I went in there.
So good.
Speaking to them about, I've got this like, I binged on this like awesome board game called Zombicide. Zombicide 2, and I was like, oh, I'm looking for this game, or this, my voice, I'm looking for this game, hello, disguise self, hello,
hi, I've come to your shop.
But yeah, basically what happened was, like, yeah, I went in there, which is like obscure reference, like, oh, do you know if I can maybe get something about this game? It's like, and they were like, yeah, no problem, you need to go to this place, get this place. They were amazing. So if you want good dice as well, go to Orcnest.
Yeah. It's also the kind of place, if you go in intending not to buy anything, you come out and you're like, how did I get all this stuff?
Yeah.
Where did it come from? You like come out in a daze. You're like, oh, all these things have appeared and my bank account is suddenly empty. What happened? So be careful. You may think you're not going to get anything when you're there, but you will, because it's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the one near Covent Garden, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the one on Charing Cross Road, yeah.
I mean, I could talk about dice all day. Like,
yeah,
genuinely.
Do you have a special bunch of dice, Hannah?
I do have a couple that I genuinely believe are lucky. And I think one of them is my first ever D20 that I got. So I always have that. But I do like to go through my massive collection of dice and choose ones that I think are like thematically appropriate for the character or game that I'm DMing.
Yeah.
Some of them feel more associated to some characters than others. And the red ones are the murder dice. So
the red ones are the murder dice.
Yeah, if I want to get rid of some player parties.
Jeez.
TPK, just roll the red ones.
Well, thanks for the warning. I'll keep that in mind.
It's all behind a screen.
I know where I'm sitting next time we're playing person.
Speaking of player characters, or actually non-player characters... Lego has a question for you, and they ask, who is your favourite NPC and who is your character's favourite NPC?
Oh my gosh.
Different.
Oh,
or they might be the same.
Oh, that's a good question. I think I always go back to the same person just because I loved their voice so much. I loved Gus. And I'll always go back to Gus. I'm sorry. I just loved her. I loved him. I can't do the voice with my throat. Maybe I can, but it's like, oh yes, who do you serve? Lady Tula de la Vaux. Oh,
Lady Tula de la Vaux.
Oh, he was so good. I was like, I genuinely have never wanted to like recruit an NPC into the adventuring party just so I can keep listening to their voice. But definitely Gus. Definitely Gus.
Oh, what about Gaius? Who does Gaius like? Does Gaius like anyone? What's going on with Gaius?
What's Gaius? Well, that's a very big question, I guess. Who does Gaius like? What's Gaius's type? And I think, I don't know.
Who does Gaius fancy?
I think Gaius admires everyone and anyone. He admires confidence. I haven't like talked about his, you know, sexuality as such, but you know, he's a person who's come from like privilege, and with that privilege, he's been and the sort of a free reign as being like, you know, connected with like the criminal world. So it's like, you know, he hasn't had to like hold up any like conservative standards like of society. So, you know, he's dabbled in hims, he's dabbled in hers, he's dabbled in theys, and he's sort of like free flowing. Yeah, that's sort of his vibe. So who's his favorite NPC? Gosh, you know what? I'll be honest with you, there's so many NPCs that I used to be like, oh, I love that person. And now I just don't trust them. I don't trust anyone these days.
Gaius doesn't trust anybody.
I did. Okay, you know what Gaius recently admired was... Gaius really admired the Archer Assassin.
Ah, cool.
Because he was slick. Dang. And he was was good at what he did. And I think that's what Gaius respected more than anything.
Gaius like, respects talent.
He respects talent. Dang. There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
I really want to have an episode where we like just play like Smash or Pass with all the NPCs and your
characters.
Oh
my gosh, that sounds absolutely fantastic. Yes.
It would be so fun.
Smash. Smash. Ooh, double smash.
Ooh. It's like, do you guys ever watch Scrubs? When they help Todd realize, they convince Todd that he's gay, but then he realizes, I just like everyone. And there's a scene, and then a final bit of the episode, he's like, nothing wrong with that. Or that. Or that. He's just checking out everyone now. So, like, Absolutely. He's like awakened to his sexuality.
Yeah.
What about, I was going to say, what about you, Daryl? What about, not about, not what about your sexuality, as in what about who's your favourite NPC?
Myra.
Oh.
Come on. Come on.
Myra is a good one. I thought about Myra.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like Myra is great with a double team of Auryn, especially.
Yes. As a combo, they're hilarious.
She brings out a lot of stuff out of them. But she had so much personality. And so much attitude and, you know, forefrontedness, which I really, really enjoyed. She's special.
Yeah.
She really is.
But what about Enkidu's favourite NPC?
I wonder if it will surprise anyone if I had said Enkidu's favourite, if he knows what an NPC is, would be Clayne Iovet.
What?
Enkidu finds Clayne effing hilarious. He is an embodiment of liberated chaos from years of just seeing it all. Do you know what I mean? And Enkidu respects the hell out of it.
Huh.
Doesn't trust him an effing inch. Not one ilm. But he does respect the hustle of Clayne, who has seen it all.
Once again, I was not anticipating that.
Yeah.
That is so left field.
That is so left field.
Clayne is brilliant. He's from Enkidu's perspective, he's come from an impoverished, crime-ridden background to a more stable, orderly, lawful one in the city. And when politics got interesting, like, there weren't anyone, like, crazy like Clayne. Like, Enkidu thinks Clayne has got a screw loose somewhere to think the way he does and to do the things he does, you know. Read your minds unsolicited. Stand invisible at the back of the room, you know, during important meetings. Like, he's, and, you know, when you tell him, like, my life is in danger, possibly, and giving you a hint, he's like, all right, yeah, sure. He doesn't seem to give a shit, or he has some other agenda. He's like almost completely unreadable, and that's interesting.
Yeah, it is pretty fascinating. So it feels like Guy really respects talent, and Enkidu is really respectful of mystery. Incredibly mysterious figure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm also curious whether either of you are worried about Clayne Iovet, but Vaughn Lowison, however you pronounce your name, I'm very sorry, Vaughn. They ask, who are you more worried about, the mages, the children of havoc, or the hex?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question.
Who is the scariest?
It depends on short-term, long-term goals of them all. Because there are some, like, for the Children of Havoc, it was very much, as soon as we heard about them, boom, things blew up in our faces, literally. And it's very scary because lives in danger, stuff like that. The mages, we are scratching the surface about them. So while we are absolutely certain there's some big, crazy thing there, you know, working towards, we don't know what it is. So that's worrying. And the hex are everywhere. And again, we have some idea what they're up to, but like what it's for, or maybe it's a simple reason we're overthinking. We're not really sure, but it kind of depends. If it's like we're going to a town we've never been before and the hex are there, yeah, that's probably the first thing we'd worry about. But if we hear of some magical shenanigans somewhere, like it's probably a consortium thing.
Yeah.
Should be careful.
It's funny, really, because obviously, it's similar. I'm not so bothered about the agent with the chaos gang because they are chaos, and like I'm almost like, okay, well, they're so unpredictable. They're kind of predictable in that, like as in they are, you know, it's predictable that I'm not going to be able to anticipate where or what they're about. So I'm just going to be happy in the fact that, like, whatever I'm doing, they're doing their own thing, and they will insert themselves into the scenario we're at or not based on their own individual, like, agendas. Their agenda isn't our agenda. It's almost just too much chaos.
Hmm.
Unless something is revealed soon. For the hex, yeah, it's like the idea of, like, the knife in your side when you're not expecting it. That's a little bit nervous, especially with how quickly suddenly the tables were turned on Enkidu. Admittedly, Enkidu did walk into the lion's mouth with that one, but but it did frighten me. It did frighten me. But I've got to say, the consortium scare the living shit out of me. And yeah. I think they scare the living crap out of Guy as well, because they were like, you know, again, Guy's loving talent, but it was so frightening how quick those arcanists bared down on us, took us down, pinned everyone to the wall, Guy's literally, and just like completely incapacitated us. And so it's the idea of like, if there's one arcanist in the room, Gaius will be like sweating a waterfall down his back.
Mm.
So for me, I'm more scared about the consortium.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me, especially with Guy knowing the hex, like actually being involved with people, like having family in the hex. Mm. Like there's kind of a, like knowing your enemy a little bit, like maybe even knowing, I don't know. I'm speculating that Guy knows at least some of his siblings' weaknesses in some ways, like having grown up with them, even if they are like horrible bullies who try to kill him.
Yeah.
But there is something about the consortium also being like legal and having that much legal power that is terrifying. And actually, Vicky's just asked in the chat, are you more scared of the consortium or the Wingthrups?
Oh, man, the Wingthrups.
Consortium. Easy consortium.
I don't know. Golem army, man.
Yeah, but like, it's a long, they're playing the long game. Erida's, you know, 500 years. Been doing this for 500 years. Really not in a hurry. Everything's in place. I'm gonna just wait. But she's linked to the consortium, and like you said, Hannah, there's that thing about legally doing whatever the F they want. Clayne saying, oh yeah, the hex are very useful, what they're doing. Like, what? Okay, cool. So you're not above using criminals who do all kinds of messed up stuff to, you know, achieve your ends. So the consortium, scarier than the Wingthrups, because the Wingthrups have some other eight-dimensional chess going on that we've not seen, you know, the meat of yet.
But the thing is, that worries me.
Oh, it's so complicated.
Yeah.
I don't know which is scarier, because the Wingthrups do have a hand in the consortium. Sorry, Chris, you were going to say.
Well, I was just going to say, like, yeah, they've got a hand in it. It's the unresolved aspect of them that I find really upsetting. And it's almost like you going out for like a massive bike ride, but you know for a fact that one of your brakes is a bit faulty. Like, you know that it's going to, like, there's going to be a moment when, you know, you need to hit those pedals really hard or hit that brake really hard and something will just go wrong, and you know it's down the line, but it's not in your interest to like investigate at the moment, because you know you've got that momentum and you've got to get to the end. And
when's the other shoe gonna drop?
Yeah, I'm waiting for it. Ooh. I'm not looking forward to it, and I know it's going to happen. And every time like Enkidu has his moments of like, we have to think about the throne, Guy, like me as a player, has consciously said, you know, Guy trusts Enkidu, because what else can Guy do? And Enkidu has proven himself in the moment. But there is the person at the back of Chris's head going, ah, Enkidu is a tool. No. So I like, there's nothing that Guy can do. There's nothing that I can do, but trust Enkidu, and trust the Wingthrup is not as big a threat as, like you say, the problem at hand.
Oh my gosh, there are so many threats at the moment.
Yes.
So Tiamat Dangerblade has a really great question, which is, as Enkidu has gone to the Hex to offer information and the Hex is now threatening the whole group, are your characters considering any implications this situation could have for Guy, especially given his connection to members of the Hex? What if they start warning other members or parts of the Hex organization? Has this crossed either of your minds?
It has crossed Guy's mind that they are playing with fire with the Hex, and his idea is always to, like, be nowhere near the Hex. And so, you know, this whole, like, seeking out the Hex sits really unwell with him. And, you know, his basically him being off the grid is, like, his most his biggest protection from his brothers and sister. And I think he has been like quite thrown by the actions of Enkidu to seek them out and say, hey, we are. And I know that Enkidu was being careful to like keep his tracks covered and so on, but we've definitely been like put on the Hex's radar now in more than one city. I think Guy and me fell into the trap of like, you know, the Hex is in like different branches and different cities, and they all sort of work together as a conglomerate, but they don't really share information. It's like one Hex's problem is another Hex's, you know, I don't care, or, oh, they're a friend. But the fact is that we are leaving quite a lot of broken glass everywhere. And that is starting to scare Guy a lot.
Well, Superfan Pippa's got a follow-up question to that, which is, does Guy have a plan should he unexpectedly bump into his siblings in the near future?
No. No. I think, Pippa, if I'm honest with you, it's that sort of thing of like where I'm coming at it like sort of stepping into Guy's shoes, as often is the case. It's a thing he doesn't want to think about. It's a thing that he hopes never happens. And there's not a question of like, if it happens, it's like, no, that's not going to happen. And if it were to happen, I think there's a few things. One, which is that Guy is terrified that they will do something to him. Guy is terrified that they will do something to like his family that he's starting to build with these people. And Guy is terrified about the truth, which is what he was saying before, which is that he's terrified that a truth is going to be revealed, that his mother was killed by her children. And that's something that I think Guy would not be able to deal with very well. So I think it's a thing of he doesn't have a plan for it because he can't. He doesn't want to process it. Which is funny because he's got a plan for like lots of things of how to get around or how to scheme or how to lie or how to cheat. But when it comes to the truth, it's a very unpleasant, sticky subject for him. Especially when it comes to his own emotions and feelings. Does that help?
He is pretty avoidant.
Yes.
Of the real, when it gets real. Mm. Yeah, so I can totally see him avoiding that even in himself and just being like, nope, not even going there.
You know, it's funny, it's even like things with like money and stuff, like jokes aside with how terrible I am with like the actual currency mechanism. But it's like, I've noticed that when Guy gets money, he wants to spend it. He wants to like lavish and stuff like that. But at the same time, he wants to keep it. So like people will offer to buy drinks and things like that. And he'll be like, okay, I'll let them buy me drinks. But oh, I want this shiny thing. I will just spend lots of money on it. And then he's back to square one. So he's like, yeah, he is. There is a lot of like shifting sands that he just likes to. He's an impulsive character. Which is something that I tend to do quite a lot because I get quite impulsive and impatient when I'm playing D&D.
Yeah, just want to like throw a spanner in the works and just see what happens.
Yeah, I'm playing a different character in a different campaign at the moment with some friends. And I've deliberately made him like so patient to try and offset that and see what happens with that. He's a monk and his idea is that he asks questions first and kicks butt fifth. Because he will always try and like convince them. Let's negotiate. Let's talk about this. Let's be patient and talk it through before jumping in and kicking butt. So yeah, Guy is exactly the opposite. He just impulse, and like you said, he's avoidant.
Yeah, he feels like very in the present moment.
Yeah,
like can work out clever solutions in the moment to the immediate problem happening. Maybe like two steps ahead at the most, but. Further down the line, it's like, yeah, I'll worry about that later.
Yeah, I tried to think about him, like, you know, does he want to become a patron of, like, other bards and stuff? Like, when he gets money, does he want to pick up a place? And after a while, I sort of dropped that idea because it just didn't feel right. I think that's the fun thing with D&D is if it doesn't feel right for the character, you can just let go.
Well, that feels very true to life, right? Where you could be like, oh, maybe I would want to try snowboarding. And then you're like, yeah, I'm going to research snowboarding. And then... after like a day of intensively researching snowboarding, you're like, no, maybe not. And like people do, well, some people I know anyway, some people I know do go through phases like that where it's like, yeah, I'm going to try this thing. Actually, no, you know what? I don't think I will. And it feels very lifelike to me that like he's trying on these different identities, particularly because he is also very mysterious about more of his like core identity.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like not the word mysterious, but untrusting of his own identity is how I would say that. Which is interesting. Oh, I've never thought about that. Hannah, you are so good at your job.
You fell for it.
Damn.
Daryl's too suspicious, but that's okay. I'll crack him one day. Get in there. Make him reveal something. Well, kind of going back to the question, did Enkidu have any thoughts about the repercussions for Guy when he wandered into the Hex Nest?
No, he didn't. He wasn't thinking that way. The only thing on his mind was like, we've left a trail of destruction. All Hex-related lead up to the biggest city in the realm where they are operating. Like, they're going to come for us at one point or another. Why don't I just see how much I can get? I'm not like planning to infiltrate there by myself and like find some kind of, you know, incriminating document on the chat. I'm not going to find that. I'm just see if they're willing to talk, because they don't openly go out and blow stuff up and, you know, assassinate people. They're enterprising. Do you know what I mean? But then didn't expect Malleus.
Yeah,
just didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, Gaius wasn't upset with Enkidu so much because he could like, because Enkidu is he's a utilizer, isn't he? He thinks of things very like strategy based of like, okay, what can we use? What are the circumstances? What are the tools around us to achieve that end? So it wasn't like a thing where he was thinking about it with Guy's thoughts in mind or feelings in mind. It was that, I can see how he did this because he wanted to like know more or to like, you know, smooth things over or to cover our tracks. So that's Enkidu, isn't it, Daryl, where it's like he is very resourceful. In people and situations, and that's how he like works best.
Yeah.
I feel like Enkidu's almost like the other side of the coin of impulsive, where there's always a solid rationale, but it's still a really impulsive decision. Whereas like Guy, it kind of feels like, yeah, this feels good, I'll do this thing, why not? Whereas Enkidu, it feels like, this could be really smart. I've got a strategy for at least maybe the next day, but like kind of no further than that. And we'll kind of just do it without talking to people, which also feels really impulsive.
Yeah. Because like everything's against the Abracalads. There's so much we don't know. And everyone we're dealing with has been doing what they've been doing for so long. It's hard. It's like the whole, you know, the iceberg thing. You see, like, the surface of it, but there's layers upon layers upon layers beneath the water's edge. And how do you get there? There's no real hints as to who you can talk to and where you can go to, you know, kind of, like, delve beneath the surface. And sometimes you take a risk, do you know? Because we kind of just go blindly town to town or person to person and kind of do what everyone tells us to do and asks us to do. And it's kind of like, well, we need to take charge at some point, maybe try this. And thing is, this is one of Enkidu's character flaws, in that he won't tell anyone about some of the things he really wants to do, because he suspects and fears that it will be an unpopular decision or thing to do. So rather than put it to the group and be voted down, he's like, but what if I'm right?
Rejection.
It's not even rejection, because not even about rejection, because if he's wrong, the risk is, and if he's wrong and he's by himself, only he dies. Of course, like, he has his friends to bring back inside him. Like, that's a risk they've all taken in the past. But if he's wrong, the damage is mostly to himself. But if he was right, it brought back a win, something they have, because they, as a group so far in the story, they've had no advantages in any situation. They've kind of just walked into a situation like, how do we get out of this? And we've been very fortunate to get out of it so far. And every situation is like by the skin of our teeth. But like, Enkidu's looking, actively looking for what do we have over anyone we've come across? What is it? How do we get it?
I also love that some of Enkidu's decisions are from a place of like, no, I control my own destiny. I'm not doing what everybody else tells me to do.
Rebel.
Yeah, this really rebellious streak where it's like, no, yeah. I'm in charge of myself. Damn it, I may be a Winthrop construct, but I can still think for myself and well, put everyone yeah. in danger.
Well, that's the thing. That is part of it. That is part of it. You know, being reconstructed when he should be dead. And then being told that he has this added compulsion to go to a place he wanted to go to anyway, but now it's not entirely for his own reasons. So, and even though he was left with a cryptic message from Erida saying, feel free to go against us, you're your own man. Like, there's a double meaning of that, because you do have some kind of assertion over him. And maybe some of his impulsive tendencies are kind of like to oppose that will, to kind of truly test, like, am I still 100% me?
He's trying to prove to himself that he's himself. Yeah
This might be a great point to ask another question.
Ooh.
I was gonna do my best Superfan Sam impression, but then I thought that would be weird, so I'm just gonna read it in my voice. But Superfan Sam Oakes says, hey, you gorgeous peeps, I'm so sorry I can't join you for this outing, but I'm sure I've left my QM seat in very capable hands. Aw.
Yeah.
And can't wait to hear all the dishy responses to my question.
Dish.
So, yeah, got a dish. So this one's for Daryl. As the story progresses, Enkidu has found himself in several tricky situations when he acts on impulse and goes rogue. Are we starting to see a change in Enkidu where he begins to include the party in some of his dealings? Or do you think we're close to the point that Enkidu will have to abandon the party to reach his end goal? Very on topic.
Sorry.
So Vicky says, Daryl going rogue? Surely not.
Never. I'm straight-laced as they come. I'm always just...
Lawful. No chaos.
Yeah. Are we coming to that junction, though, Daryl? Or is the party still, like... Is the party still useful?
Oh, I was never going to go that way, but since you did, let's go. Let's go. I think there is one thing, without spoiling anything, there is one conversation the group are having where Enkidu very much strongly feels a certain way about, which... some of the others are kind of like on the fence about, and he's very vehemently like, don't want to do that. Do not want to do that. But he's not going to, like, you know, fly out the window and never see you again. Kind of like, it's not that kind of decision. But I think we're coming to a point where now that they have learnt more things, certain directions are amenable to be changed. And he's definitely coming around, like, he's being more open more. I think after getting his ass kicked by Malleus and having his body taken over again, you know, there was that moment when, you know, he had, for the second time, was forced to kind of be more open about why he's doing the things he's doing and share that and say, look, this is how I think of myself. And this is what I think of you on why I do the things I do. And then very heartwarmingly told, like, look, you just need to share these things, because, you know, everything comes in a balance, and this is what it's like when you're part of a group. You know, we talk about these things and we discuss and we decide together, and, you know, this is how these things work. And he is sharing a lot more of himself than he used to. But I don't think we're at a juncture where he's gonna just like, all right guys, peace, and then that's it.
Not yet, anyway.
Oh, it depends what happens next.
Depends what they do.
Nah.
Got a question from Pippa.
Oh.
Superfan Pip, would you like to jump on?
Hey-ya.
Hey, gang. Hello. My question is, what has been your favourite episode or moment of the For Lost Vale arc so far?
Oh, only man. Up to episode 67.
Remember? Oh, don't do that.
That is a good one.
Because there are some juicy belters to look forward to. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
I did quite, again, I'm going to come back to. Oh, no, I've got it because it was a blunder. I forgot. I really enjoyed just my blunder of like doing. I was so excited to use Dimension Door for the first time. During the the archers like assassination attempt, and I was like, "There's a tower over there," and I dimension doored inside it, and then I realised, "Oh no, I've gone yes! to the danger," and I didn't bring anyone with me, and I realised I could have done that, and I was just like, so that was fun. That was like a favourite moment of mine to be like, "Why didn't you think, Chris?"
just grab someone.
You had like a warlock right next to you who
would have appreciated the lift because you got there so fast. It took me 3 turns to get there.
Yes.
By the time we got there, you were almost dead.
I was almost dead. I could have died.
Yeah,
but that was fun.
Yeah, speaking of favorite moments, mine's kind of related. It's when Gaius dropped a staircase on as we're fighting Dane, you collapse the stairs?
Yes,
I forgot what it was you cast because it knocked him out. He was out. Took him out.
Yeah.
We're fighting Dane, and like this is a tactical genius battle.
Oh yes, yeah. I did. I used Shatter on the thing.
That was it. Shatter on the pillar, and then we're upstairs.
Yeah, I think that was it. It was like I was trying to like block his exit, and it ended up just sort of going slightly awry.
I think that doubled with Gwendolyn trying to capture Giggles. Oh, the frustration was real.
Oh, those are great moments.
Yeah.
I love that. What a great question. Thank you, Pip.
Actually, I do have just one little image that I've just poking my head. Ooh. But for some reason, became very vivid. It was when Enkidu had to go and have some like alone time. And he just left me and Juna like floating in the sky. Or like someone was basically floating in the sky with Enkidu. And Enkidu was like, "I have to have some alone time." And like Batmaned out of there. And it was just like a really like nice quiet moment of just like, I could just picture this city because we're over the park in the rain. It was like a really nice little image in my head.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris Omen has a question for you. They say, let's talk about the dragon in the room. What was going through your mind when you decided to summon a dragon in City Hall?
Was there anything going through your mind?
Yes, okay.
Everyone's so impulsive. I love it.
It wasn't me being like, oh, okay, what would my character do? Guys, this is an impulsive. No, I was just like super excited that I had this cool spell. And I was like, screw it. They've given me a blank canvas. I'm going to do what I want with it. We've got a dragon. And it's like crashing through the columns and setting fire to this ancient library, and I was just like going to town. I was just enjoying it so much, and then I realized where I was, what the stakes were afterwards.
It is always fun when you're like, oh my god, I have so many cool new spells, well, I've just got to use them.
Well, that's it.
Do it.
That's it. I mean, exactly, someone was saying like you could have literally just like caused the sound from over there, or started a fight over there, or even just like at most pushed some books off a shelf. But for some reason, I decided to go ultra diversion.
Go big or go home, baby. Let's
go. Go big or go home.
Go big or go home, man. Go big or go home.
Yeah. So,
Vicky's on board.
So now I've got this thing with Auron where it's like, if everyone's asking me for a diversion or a distraction, I've got like a scale, and I'll just be like, okay, from 1 to 5, how big are we talking here? 5 is dragon. Like, 1 is like, you know, maybe like someone stubs a toe.
You know? That's a massive scale.
Well,
it escalates so quickly, 1 to 5. That's so, like, what's the middle of that?
We'll find out.
Yeah, dragon is pretty big.
We'll find out.
And 1 is stub your toe. What's 2?
No, I'm waiting for the moment.
Set the place on fire.
I'm really waiting for that moment when it's like Hulk smash, when they go like, when he was like, okay, what level of diversion do you want there, Gwendolyn? And she goes, I want a 6. And I'll be like, oh yeah, it's on. That's what I can't wait for.
Gosh.
Bigger than the dragon.
Summons a portal to the demon world or something.
Like... Summons an actual demon prince.
Yep.
I've got a question from Kit for both of you.
Ooh.
Which is, would you ever, or have you ever, swapped out a character mid-campaign, either by killing them off or just having them go off on a different journey and play someone else for a while? And on a related note, do you ever make backup characters or make a character just for fun?
Like, no.
No contingency plan.
No contingencies. I when I make a character, I want to be fully invested in that character. I don't want to think, oh, this situation's dicey, but I have a backup character ready. No, because then there has to be a time set up when you're going to play that character and get into that character shoes. So I don't make up backup characters. I've never... I mean...
But Enkidu's multiple characters.
He's not. He's one person.
You've got multiple characters in one.
No. I mean, technically, I have two characters in this campaign. Judge and the Fabuloso stories. But it's not a swap. It's kind of like, you jump to this character for a hot sec. But I've never swapped out a character. Or no.
Yeah, I'm going to be like... playing here as well and say that I haven't swapped a character yet. Maybe just because, like, you know, with D&D you have the creativity to create characters you want to create. And I think as well, for me, I've had moments where the shoe isn't quite fitting right, or I need to like walk in the shoe for a while to like fit it in. So like I'll start off with a character, be like, oh, I'm not really sure about this, and I'll do a few sessions, and then like the DM will often do like a really fun, like glorifying moment where I get to, or we'll do something completely left wing and I'll learn something new about the character. So I think it's that where it's like, I don't necessarily need to create a whole new character, but maybe the character in itself changes slightly, or they discover something about themselves that makes them new and interesting. But at the moment, I'm
like adjustment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think alignments are very useful, but I don't think we need to stick to them necessarily always.
Yeah. Completely. It's always interesting as well when a story prompts your character to do something that surprises you.
Yeah.
That's kind of the funnest moment. Well, that's one of the funnest moments. Actually, it's a DM as well when the character starts really... I mean, they surprise you all the time and they ruin everything you plan. But it's always really cool to see when the players get excited about their characters again.
Mm-hmm.
And go, ooh. This is like a new evolution of this person.
Yeah.
And kind of on the topic of character creation, Supervan Sam has a burning question for Chris, which is, what the hell even are you? Can I see your character sheet? Because Gaius is hands down the weirdest bard/rogue I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've adventured with you enough to know you love to keep an ace up your sleeve when you create a character. Have you got a major reveal planned?
Oh, what is this insight, Sam?
Hashtag no cryptic answers, please.
Oh, hello.
Well, all right, I will give the honest answer. Which is that... Basically, Guy's a bard, and he's just a bard.
I knew it. He's a bard. Say that.
He is just a bard. But I will say this, which is that, and David knows this. One, I rolled really high for him on certain things, which I was not expecting because it was going against what I was going for. But the second thing is as well is that Guy, I deliberately made Guy faulty. His charisma was not the highest. His stats were strongest in his dexterity, in him being sneaky, in him sleight of hand. I haven't sleight of handed much, but I gotta tell you, I have got a high stat for that. But when it comes to charisma and stuff, I really wanted to play with, and this goes into the backstory that we've talked about, because revelation, I've actually been more truthful. Guy's been more truthful than he has lied in a long, long time. And that whole thing about him being a bard for only really like a year and a half. It's very true. He's learning how to play the lute. He's got all this inspiration. And it's with like his class, his subclass, that we've got to play with that more, which was a sort of homebrew that David and I created and
that
tweaked.
Makes sense.
It's called College of Wiles.
Ooh.
So College of Wiles is one that we sort of created, which is the idea of being able to use storytelling abilities to cause their audiences to doubt what is true and to begin to question what they see before them. So it's for very manipulative bards, can be used for personal gain or to sow discord in their enemies. So either way, bards of this college are often considered untrustworthy and chased away if their lies come out into the truth or into the light. So yeah.
So cool.
So I've got, you know, opportunities in my magic to sort of manipulate people's minds and sort of make them believe they're doing well and get a boon from that, or believe they're doing terrible and get a deduction from whatever roles they're doing and stuff like that. So I wanted to play with a class that wasn't like a swashbuckler, wasn't like a, I wanted to do something that was like almost like Mastermind, the rogue of Mastermind, but basically coming from a place of he's kind of a mastermind, but he's too impulsive to be a, you know, like you said, he doesn't have like a grand scheme. He's not Joker.
Yeah.
He is just flying by the seat of his pants and making lies, hoping that they will bear fruit for him. So that's actually what Guy is.
That's such a cool subclass.
Yeah.
I want to see all the details. I want to read it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to read all about it. I want to play one as well, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's really fun. And I haven't utilized his class enough, actually. You know, I haven't, like, I did it initially at the start quite a lot, where I would be like, I'm using Bend the Truth to do this or whatever. But I just haven't remembered to do that as much in our games. But I'm definitely going to start like reintroducing it and stuff. But, you know, I've just been getting too excited with, you know, Major Illusion and
all the fun spells.
All the fun spells and stuff. So, yeah, I definitely need to start leaning into that subclass a lot more as well.
Yeah.
But for the good of the group, not just for Guy.
Yeah. Well, Grace has just reminded me, because apparently I don't pay attention to all the cool stuff you get with a Patreon subscription. The subclass is available on Patreon.
Woohoo!
So if you want to join the Patreon and actually read about the College of Wiles, you can. And I know what I'm doing after this Q&A.
Yeah!
Brilliant.
So yeah, check it out. That sounds so cool. I think we're coming towards the end of this super fun question session. And we've got a couple more questions. One from the lovely Ashley Hooch Dangerfield. Hi, Ashley. Who asks, both of you, if you could DM for anyone, dead or alive, who would be your ideal party?
Oh,
about 4 to 6 people.
That's so good. On. That's such a good question.
Oh my gosh.
Daryl, go first.
Oh my gosh, what? Who do I DM for? I mean, everyone here, for starters.
Aww.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Aww, you know, that's so
we're
sweet.
Doing that for 100%. Of course. But you I know the question really wants like star casting, you know, who do you want at your table? Like, oh my gosh, here we go. I don't know, it's really hard. I think someone like Brennelly Monaghan would be mentor to DM for. I'm scared of Emily Axford. She would just break the game like into pieces. I don't recognize. I don't know how she does what she does.
Oh, those two as a combo, though.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. B. Dave Waters is. Oh man, he's like a classy. He's like the cool uncle DM. He's just so cool. That's one person. But outside the D&D sphere, to make it like more interesting.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of. Yeah.
I would like to know what Samuel Jackson would be like if he was to pick up a bit of dice. Yes. I want a bad motherfucker at my table.
Yeah. I am sick and tired of these motherfucking gnolls on this motherfucking plane.
Hey, yes!
spelled P-L-A-I-N.
Yes! That's so sick.
Just because, like, they're out, there's so many, you know what, I've got to have to come back with this question another time, but just because they're at the forefront of my mind, I was teaching a maths class today, and there's two people that I always quite reference to the kids, which is Katherine Johnson and Albert Einstein. And I'm just like, I've got their heads in my mind at the moment. I just feel like, actually, you know, it would be interesting to see what happens there.
It would be so fun.
Like, and also, I would love the challenge of being able to create a DM puzzle that beats Einstein and Johnson. That really makes them sweat. How? Now that is Everest. And I would love to set that challenge.
Put them in an escape room.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would be so good.
Give them the wing thrups. I'd love to see what happens.
Oh my gosh.
Put Einstein to work against David Knight.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So cool.
A couple more people. Brandon Sanderson.
Who's he?
If you remember the Ramblers Rest episode one, I tried to get you into... I'm actually wearing, like, MacGuffins from, like, his book series. I'm that much of a fanboy. He's a massive, massive nerd. Massive nerd. He'll be brilliant as a player. He's chaotic as well. Like, you wouldn't think of it. He's a mild-mannered man, but he's... Gosh, like some of his tales on the table are ridiculous. Tolkien would be a nice addition as well.
Yep, Tolkien would be interesting.
Oh my God, Tolkien would be such a rules lawyer.
Just to see what people made out of his legacy. Obviously, the original face of D&D, like the original version of it, is heavily inspired from his works in Middle Earth.
Gary Gygax.
Oh, well, everyone wants to play with Gary.
Yeah, go Gazza. But just for him to be like, oh, it's interesting, like, where D&D has gone since, like, the creation of what I did as well.
I think it might be time for our very last question. Yes. And it's not going to be asked by me. It's going to be asked by Pippa.
Pippa's back.
Yeah, Superfan Pip, take it away.
My final question is, what has been your favourite small role of the campaign?
Small role, oh gosh.
Yeah, mine's easy.
What's yours, Daryl?
It just happened. After getting his ass handed to him in the sewers and then coming, surfacing back up, I'm like, I need to some healing. I need to talk to my friends. Natural one. If I told you I'd made that up, you'd probably believe it, but I hadn't. It was a natural one. And I loved it. I didn't despair. I was like, bring the drama. Let's go. Let's see what happens. That's my favorite. I know it happened to me and whatever. But like, that was the timing of it was ludicrous.
I think mine was like, wasn't there like an animal handling check, which Juna did with some squirrels or something and was like, hey, can you help us with this information? And it was a low roll and the squirrels were just like, no, get lost. We're busy doing squirrel stuff. Like, can you just like leave us alone? I love that.
Yeah. That was so good.
It's like, no, I'm not going to burden my day with your troubles. Can you just get lost? I'm trying to like, I think they were, I think one was chasing the other one, like in like a sort of courtship sort of thing. I was like, dude, you're killing my vibe. Like, stop being such a block and just get away.
It's mating seasons. I don't have time for your human problems. Please.
That was my favorite one.
Please.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, that was... Both of them are so great. Oh, this has been such a blast. I've had so much fun with both
Me
of
too.
You.
It's been
and
such
all
fun.
The lovely people who've joined us on the No Small Questions on the Zoom from Patreon and who've asked questions. And it's been so great. So before we finish completely, do either of you guys have anything to plug?
Not right now, no. Just carry on listening to No Small Roles, wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah,
check out the latest Superfan Chats. Yeah, exactly the one we're doing right now. Check out Superfan Chats, which I always listen to it twice every time it comes out. So just, I enjoy the theorising. And I love hearing new super fans. So please continue to listen to the show.
Yeah, we've had a few new additions to the gang, which has been really, really cool.
Yeah.
Soon we're going to take over.
Oh, no.
Soon the army of superfans will be complete.
Yes. And then we will challenge the Winthrops for supremacy of the world.
Yes. Who's the superior golem army now?
Just be beating up Erid and just be like, I'm sorry, that's restricted to higher ranking crumpets, you idiot. Take that! Take that!
You've got to spend more on those Patreon tiers, you want to know that.
Yeah.
The name is Lord Crumpet.
Oh, brilliant. So I'm guessing nothing else but no small roles. Just no small roles all the way.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. It's been so much fun. It's been such a blast. Yeah, where this podcast has come from and where it's going to. It's just so much fun. And we love having more people on the journey with us.
And it feels really, really great to feel part of the No Small Roles fam. Like, it's a very, very welcoming place. Oh, Zoom group hug.
Yeah. I can't do it. I can't do the little heart thing with the index fingers. You know what I'm trying to do?
Oh, what's the... That's fine. We're explaining hand motions to an audio recording. I got it.
This is an audio medium and we are now using hand language, a visual medium. I think on that note, maybe we should end this episode of No Small Questions. Thank you all so much for joining us. And we're gonna say the thing together, right? Are we going to count down or are we just going to vibe it?
Vibe, please.
I'm gonna watch your eyes.
Okay, you ready?
And none for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.